Pennsylvania and its storied history will be on full display in 2 years as the nation celebrates its 250th birthday. And we have so many national landmarks right here in Pennsylvania that are critical to our nation's founding. Think of the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall in Philadelphia. Those are two landmarks and icons that come to mind. And as we look across the state, we know that there are stories that have been told for more than two centuries about the founding of our nation. And here in York, we are home to the first capital of the United States. It was here in York where the Articles of Confederation were adopted, giving us our country's first constitution. And it's also here in York County where this very nation was first referred to as the United States of America. But the history doesn't stop there. As a member of the Pennsylvania Commission for the United States Semi-Quincentennial or America 250 PA Infrastructure Improvements and Projects Committee, I was formally introduced to a huge part of our nation's history that's still being discovered and told today in Springetsbury Township, York County. This is State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill, and we have two guests on today's podcast who are working behind the scenes to share the story of Camp Security. Carol Tanzola and John Cromer are with Friends of Camp Security. So I want to say, Carol, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we are really glad to have you here. And can you share with our listeners who may not be familiar with Camp Security, what is Camp Security?
Camp Security is actually a Revolutionary War POW camp prisoners were in Lancaster, and they threw them over the river to kind of prevent some escapees, and compromises a large parcel of property. What do we figure? 150 acres, yeah, roughly. And it was, back in late 1998, I think, I was on the Township Historic Preservation Committee, and they said, go out and find the top 100 sites within the township, number one being the one you'd lay down in front of the bulldozer for. Well, everybody jokes I've been laying down ever since.
haven't really laid down in front of a bulldozer, have you?
It was threatened by development, and that started the efforts to preserve the site, and it took a lot of pro bono legal help and push and help from DCNR and the Conservation Fund and the township and the county in order to save the land from development. And since then, I think that was like 2014, we went ahead and started doing excavation on the site. But John, do you want to throw in anything more about the history of it?
Yeah, so just add a little more context to the history of the site.
And John, you are an archaeologist.
I am an archaeologist, yes.
So you really have an informed perspective on the important work that's happening at Camp Security.
I like to think it's pretty informed. Some of the history of Camp Security. So it was first occupied in 1781, and then was occupied for about 22 months or so, all the way to the end of the war in 1783 in the spring. There was roughly, we think that we go back and forth a little bit on the exact numbers of the population of the camp. I think 1500 is probably a good number, but that's always subject to change. And when we find more things, that could be wrong. So, the 1500 prisoners that were there, they sort of came in waves. The first wave, came from prisoners after that came from the Battle of Saratoga. They were known as the Convention Troops. The Battle of Saratoga, I believe 1777, and they made it into Camp Security 1781. So they were first captured in New York and then were sort of paraded around. They moved around a lot as the war progressed. And a lot of that movement was simply because the sort of front lines of the war were shifting. Prior to coming to Camp Security, they were mostly in Charlottesville, Virginia, had a prison camp there. But then there was later in the war, there were some movement from the British from the south pushing northward. And so to prevent them from being recaptured, they were moved into York. The York and Lancaster area, that whole central Pennsylvania area, was kind of a little bit of a hub for POWs during the war. Now, in the very beginning of the war, during the sort of Canadian expeditions, it was almost like a little bit of an afterthought. The Continental Congress had no policy in terms of prisoners of war. And the British didn't really consider their American POWs to be POWs. They were traitors or treasonous. So they weren't really given, you know, treatment
there
as POWs.
There was no Geneva Convention.
There was no Geneva Convention.
They were basically put on boats in the middle of New York Harbor and rotted.
Yes. So the Continental Congress, to sort of make themselves look a little bit more morally better than the British, they embraced the more traditional European POW stance. And so they would allocate like provisions. There was a lot of the costs incurred in terms of like feeding prisoners and housing them were kept with, a lot of times it was the towns that incurred a lot of the costs. Kind of Congress would refund a little bit and try to get money from the British too. And it was all a big mess. So in that sort of early phases of the war, Lancaster was actually a prime area for POWs because Lancaster had an empty barracks. So in the French Indian War, there was a barracks that was built in downtown Lancaster. And so they threw the prisoners into the barracks and sort of called it done. There was a little bit of an issue in terms of stockade that they weren't like guarded and they weren't fenced in. And the committees of security in Lancaster were upset by this and they were sending letters to the Continental Congress saying, hey, we need to put up a stockade. And that eventually did happen after tensions between prisoners and the people in Lancaster sort of reached a little bit of a boiling point. The idea from the Continental Congress was that, you know, we're going to have these prisoners come into Lancaster and they're going to see the plight of the local people in Lancaster. They're going to sort of sympathize with the revolutionary cause. And that didn't manifest. It was more the opposite. It created tensions. So eventually a stockade was built around the camp in Lancaster, the barracks. And we actually have a map. Somebody drew a map and sent that map of the barracks, sent that map to the Continental Congress for approval to be, this is going to be the model of all the prison camps in the country from now. And so that was back in 1776. So the war progresses. Eventually we get our way to Camp Security. Now, the reason Camp Security was built in York in particular was, again, the convention troops had to be moved because they were in Charlottesville. So Lancaster was the ideal place because you already had a barracks there. You've had prisoners there for a while. The issue was that there were so many prisoners, they couldn't handle the population in Lancaster. So it was decided that we're going to send the prisoners across Susquehanna into York. And the York County Militia was then tasked with building a stockaded camp for roughly 1,000 prisoners or so. And they had about a month to do it. So, and we're talking like a stockade.
It's not a lot of time. It's not like you call Kinsley Construction in and say, hey, guys, we need a stockade. Here's the model plans that George Washington and the Continental Congress have approved. How quickly can you get this up?
And you have to remember, too, they arrive with wives and children. Yes. Because quite often the soldiers were allowed to bring their spouses and family from England to come over and fight the war. So that's a whole nother ball game.
Yeah, we think that maybe about a third of the prison population were women and children. And they mostly, so when prisoners were moved into the camp, first of all, we don't think it was fully constructed when the first prisoners arrived. We think that actually some of the prisoners may have helped build parts of the camp. But eventually, and these were the convention troops, most of them were housed in the stockade. Those with women and children were allowed to stay outside of the stockade. The reason being is really mostly for financial reasons. So in order, the women and children weren't really considered prisoners, so they didn't get rations. And this was a big issue in Lancaster and for the Continental Congress. They would constantly be getting letters saying, you know, women and children, we need blankets for the women and children. We need provisions. Oftentimes the Continental Congress sort of threw up their hands because they didn't have any money or anything for these people. So in Lancaster in particular, the people of Lancaster, the local government sort of footed the bill to make sure women and children weren't starving and freezing to death. And then from that experience in Lancaster, I think that they learned a little bit and they decided, all right, we're going to have women and children separate from the camp, close, but separate. And they're going to be able to have some freedom to be able to go into town, sell goods, or, you know, the men can go work on farms. That way they can get some of their own money and fend for themselves a little bit. To alleviate some of the cost associated with with feeding them. So then the Battle of Yorktown happens, and a number of Yorktown prisoners are then sent to camp security. When that happens...
And Yorktown is quite a drive, even by today's standards, to go from Yorktown, Virginia... Yorktown,
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hike, I would say.
Even in a car.
Yeah.
And at one point, I actually read that there were as many, when the troops were marched in from Cornwallis's troops from Yorktown, that there were as many of those troops as there actually was in the population of York. So I, you know, you hear all this and it comes through. We have yet to pinpoint the exact numbers. But it was, we had a substantial amount of prisoners in York County.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I just sticks in my mind, from that time period when, our founders had to flee Philadelphia, they went to Lancaster, Lancaster couldn't keep them safe. They came to York, where all that important work to draft the Articles of Confederation happened. And local accounts speak to, how they felt about the founders being here. But the founders also noted that they viewed us as being quite provincial and that the majority of Yorkers did not speak English.
Yeah.
They spoke German. And so now you have an enormous number of Englishmen and their family members descending upon York, which our founders viewed as being provincial, and most people spoke German. So how did that all work out?
Well, so it's really interesting. So there's a historian who's done a lot of work, particularly in Lancaster, not so much on the York camp. His name's Ken Miller, wrote a book called Dangerous Guests. I believe that's the name of it. And he talks about the effects of the prisoners on the sort of local townspeople and their relationship to the broader war. So prior to prisoners arriving into York and Lancaster counties, the population was mostly sort of divided along ethnic lines, like you were saying. So you German
speaking. The Welsh were down in the southeast corner, and the Germans more concentrated in the center. And then the English were over in Glen Rock.
Exactly. And that's those ethnic divisions were paramount relative to the broader revolution and a broader idea of being an American, right? There, and of course, there were loyalists in York and Lancaster counties. There were revolutionaries. You know, there were just different ideas around the broader political situation. However, when prisoners start coming in into the situation, then they start having the war is now at your front door. You're now seeing redcoats walking down your streets. And remember, the British, particularly in Lancaster, originally they weren't stockaded, and they would. There was a growing resentment between the locals and the prisoners. This was particularly true as soon as, you know, families started hearing about their loved one who was often in Canada or wherever fighting, and find out, you know, they died or were injured. Meanwhile, you have redcoats walking the streets. It's changed the revolutionary tenor of the area. There weren't as many loyalists anymore. And the ethnic divides weren't as great. It was more of this idea of, you know, we're Americans, we're against this empire, right? So that the prisoners coming into York and Lancaster really shaped the revolutionary tenor of the area. And I think still echo to today.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you need that history to understand how this site evolved, how it came about. But in your conversation, John, you spoke about those prisoners from the Battle of Saratoga being moved around quite a bit, down to Virginia, up to Lancaster, over to York. So there clearly were sites that were Revolutionary War, prisoner of war camps in many other states. And what's happened to most of those?
So they've all been destroyed, as far as we know. So they were just developed over the course of the 20th century. Camp security, one of the big reasons why camp security is nationally significant is because it's the last site of this type.
We are the only remaining Revolutionary War, prisoner of war camp site
in
that
country
has not been paved over.
That's right.
In the United States.
Yes. And it's the only example we have of the nation's first prison camps, prisoner of war camps.
How historically significant is that?
It's extremely significant.
Extremely. Extremely.
It's worth laying down
in front of
the
bulldozer for it.
Well, before we go any further, Carol, we need to thank you for being willing to lay yourself down in front of that bulldozer to save what really is a national treasure.
It is a national treasure. And, you know, interestingly, I look back at all the time that I've been laying down in front of the bulldozer. And initially, just before we got the funding to save this site or just afterwards, a lot of the prisoners, the British prisoners, many of them went to Canada. And I had a young gentleman helping me whose great-great-great-great-great-grandfather had been a guard at Camp Security. Well, somehow the news of what we were doing reached Canada, and a gentleman reached out, and his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was a prisoner at Camp Security. He came down and met the fellow whose relative was a guard, and the two of them embraced on that site. And I'll tell you, the tears were just mind-blowing.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. It is truly amazing. And the little things that have come along the way, and the different people whose paths I've crossed, and, you know, looking through artifacts that were found at the State Museum years ago, one of which is now in the Museum of the American Revolution, which actually belongs to us, but we won't go there.
Well, that's something we may be able to work on getting back as this work progresses. But you talk about the amount of work, you know, 1,326 hours spent in 2023 alone on surveying, excavating, lab work, done primarily by volunteers.
Yes, that's the amazing thing. People will call and sign up and they want to volunteer. And we have had a variety of different kinds of people that have volunteered.
Yeah.
We've had metal detecting folks that have come. We've had, how do I explain them? People who can sense others from previous lives that are within the area. And it has been a fascinating journey, and we're not done yet.
The psychics didn't work. Yeah. All right, just want to say the psychics didn't work.
Yes.
The dowsing rods or whatever, that was a total failure.
Yeah.
There was a point where things were getting a little bit desperate there, Carol.
Yeah, I know. We were.
Well, I guess you don't know if you don't try.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's not been an inexpensive endeavor.
Yeah.
And so there have been donations,
yes,
grants, support. Kinsley Construction has been a tremendous help.
They have always sent us a trailer of some kind that we can store our tools in when we're on site digging. Otherwise, they're in my barn. But they have always been right there helping us out. The volunteers that have come out, the volunteers who have, sat there during the day as we have an open house and we, drive people literally, it's almost over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go, because it's a long trek to get into the site where we're digging. But we just run a shuttle and we want the general public to know that it's there and realize its significance, because there is no other like this.
Well, Spring and Sperry Township has been very supportive.
Yes, they have.
The Pennsylvania Historical and Museum Commission, and now the
National Trust.
The National Trust.
Park Service.
And the Park Service?
Park Service, yeah.
So you are in your ninth year of uncovering camp security. That whole site, the initial camp built and opened in 1781. You've housed, they housed thousands upon thousands of English and German troops. And here we are today.
And we're still digging.
And you're still digging.
We are still working.
So tell me, who exactly owned the land where Camp Security is located?
Historically, or?
It was privately owned. And then a section of it was sold off to a developer. And the other portion, when the homeowner passed away, the parents passed away, the daughter took control of it. And it was a situation where we had better luck initially dealing with the purchase of the part that was owned by the relative rather than the part that was owned by the developer. And we were able to purchase that first. And the developer, whom I had been fighting initially, he finally came and he said, okay, I will sell you the land. You've got me landlocked. I want this much. And I said, well, I will do what I can, but you're only going to get what it's appraised for. So I think he wound up with about a third of what he thought he would get. And it's, it was a tough time because there were a lot of hard feelings. And I know even when I thanked the initial landowner for selling the property, she was a little miffed because she said I could have gotten more for it. So I became the thorn in everybody's side. And did I feel badly about that? Yes, I did. But my conviction was more toward the preservation of a historic site.
And at what point are we, what year are we in when you actually make that purchase?
I think it was about 2014 when it all went through. So I'd been, dealing with this since like 98, to the point my children were still in high school, and somebody come up and say, well, So how's the camp security project going? And the kids would throw up their hands and go, oh God, Mom, we'll see you later. You know, that was the end of it. But it's been a long battle. And, you know, I'm not getting younger.
Well, unfortunately, it happens to most of us. Yes. But it beats the alternative,
yes,
right?
It sure does.
But the folks who had that land had to have known about its historical significance because there was an excavation
yes.
in 1979.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The artifacts that had yes. been acquired through that dig are now over across the street from where we are having right. this conversation right now in the State Museum, waiting to be inventoried
right.
and assessed.
Well, and the thing that I found so fascinating, I had spent 7 years living in New England, and living in New England, you really develop an appreciation for the Revolutionary War. And I'll never forget, I was riding a horse with a friend of mine. She wanted me to meet her grandfather or her father. And he was the epitome of Yankee farmer. And when I met him, he said, "Where are you from, girlie? The way you roll your R's, you're not from around here." And I said, "No, I'm from York, Pennsylvania. I'm living in York, Pennsylvania, you know, dead set between Baltimore and Harrisburg and Lancaster and Gettysburg, where they fought the Civil War." He spit out his chewing tobacco and he goes, "Just you remember, we first had to win the war for our independence before we could learn to fight amongst ourselves." Well, let me tell you, I just about slid under the nearest rock. And so then I come to York, Pennsylvania, and I get involved in the Historic Preservation Committee. And everybody knew this site existed, but nobody had ever done anything about it. So go find the top 100, the one you'll lay down in front of the bulldozer for. And obviously that was the one. And then 2 years later, it's threatened by development. And I'm like, wait a minute, you don't tell me to do one thing and then tell me you're going to build on it. So that just, yeah.
Well, I respect and admire your determination and your passion.
Well, but it never could have gone as far as it has gone without the dedication and the support of everyone along the way who has helped. And, you know, even with coming into this huge grant that we have just received, I am so over my head, and I will admit it. Thank God I have people on board that can help sort through this government regulation and things. You know, just give me the simple stuff, but I need the pros for the rest.
Yeah. I love that. That's it. You know, you're only as good as the people that you surround
right,
yourself
you're
with.
Right.
And clearly you have surrounded yourself by the right people. So I have a couple lingering questions for you. So you spoke about the gentleman who is the descendant of one of the individuals who was held at camp security in Canada, coming from Canada down to see the site and meet for the first time a descendant of one of the prison guards. So where did most of these prisoners go when the Revolutionary War was over?
From what we gather, a lot of them did go to Canada. A lot of them went back to England. And we've had folks along the way. One of our members, Jonathan Stayer, is actually compiling a list of guards that were at the campsite. We have had another individual who is British who has made some inroads in England to try and get lists of some of the prisoners that were here. And we do have some reports written by Sergeant Lamb, who was a prisoner, camp security. What, he escaped once or twice?
Escaped once.
Once.
But he escaped a different
yeah.
camp before.
So we have those kind of stories that we have been following. And recently, John and I met with a member of the British Embassy, and they are very interested and would very much have offered, you know, can't send you money, but we'll be more than happy to come up and do a flag ceremony or whatever. So, I mean, it's really pulling the heritage of our country and the British together in a different way than we were the last time we fought the revolution. So, I mean, we've been allies ever since through the years, but to bring it back to the revolutionary period, I think is just fascinating.
Well, I think that would be fantastic.
Let you know.
I will look forward to when that happens. And of course, Great Britain is truly one of our greatest allies. And it's exciting.
It is.
We are coming up on a very, very momentous occasion that with our 250th birthday of this great nation. And I can very vividly remember back. Now, John, you probably cannot. You will have to read about it in a history book. But Carol and I can probably very vividly remember our 200th
That's right.
birthday and the great celebration that we had and how meaningful it was to so many people. So I think we're all really excited. And I think York has something very special to share, not only with fellow Pennsylvanians, fellow Americans, but the world.
I think it's very humbling to realize just what York does have to offer and the place it's played in history. At least it is very humbling to me.
Well, I don't think any of us could say it any better than that, Carol. So, Carol, John, this has been absolutely fascinating. I want to thank you for the tremendous work that you are doing to preserve this site and to share the story of Camp Security, York County, and our nation's birth through the revolution. So folks are listening. They want to find out more about the important work that you are doing. Maybe they even want to sign up to volunteer to help you continue to tell this important story. Where can they find you?
So they can go to campsecurity.org, and we have a newsletter. You just sign up for the newsletter, and that's where you'll find out about, you know, recent news, about any grant funding that we get. You also find out about when we're digging next, how to register for volunteer work if you're interested.
And you would be happy to have their time, their talent, and their treasure.
And their interest.
Whatever they're willing to give, I'll take.
Yep. Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you again. This has been absolutely fantastic. Today's guests were Carol Tanzola and John Cromer with Friends of Camp Security. Thank you again for tuning in to today's episode. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to visit my website at senatorkristen.com. This is Kristen Phillips-Hill signing off, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.